When we look at a $20 bill, I feel like we usually just see paper. We see like a quick lunch or, I don't know, a fraction of a utility bill. We just view it as this really simple transactional thing.
Yeah, totally. It's just a medium of exchange, like a number on a screen. I mean, that is exactly how we are trained to look at it.
But the moment you start looking at personal finance, not like a consumer, but almost like a physicist, that $20 bill isn't just paper anymore.
No, it's battery.
Exactly. It is a battery. It's a literal storage cell holding your time, your sweat, your actual life energy.
And, when you reframe it that way, the definition of a casual purchase completely changes. You start seeing the hidden drain on that battery literally everywhere.
Which is exactly why the core law we're analyzing today for this deep dive is so fascinating, and it's so dangerous if you misunderstand it. The source material states it plainly. Always be frugal, never be cheap. Frugality breeds wealth, cheapness leads to poverty.
Is a really powerful distinction.
It is, because look, if money is stored energy, being cheap is actually the fastest way to just drain your battery. So let's unpack this text today. From my perspective as a small business owner and an investor, I mean, I evaluate every dollar I spend through the lens of return on investment and opportunity costs. Like if I allocate capital over here, what am I losing out on over there?
Right. And from my perspective, having spent years as a teacher and now as a personal finance coach, I really focus heavily on the behavioral side of that exact equation.
The mindset stuff.
Exactly. I sit down with everyday families who are, just trying to overcome scarcity mindsets and emotional spending triggers. And I can tell you the hardest thing to break is the internal dialogue that keeps people trapped in financial stress.
Which is perfectly where the author starts this chapter. The core premise we're exploring today is that small financial decisions, repeated over decades, they literally shape your long-term wealth. And the text argues that it all begins with the vocabulary you use inside your own head.
Yeah, we have to start with the psychology here. Because before we can talk about how you spend money at the register, we have to examine how you think about money. The source points out something fundamental. We think in words. If you need a shovel, you picture a shovel, sure, but your brain literally runs the linguistic code, I need a shovel. Like, words are the programming language of the human brain.
And the text actually warns that there is one specific word you never want running in that internal code. A word the author considers to be practically profane, which is the word cheap.
Yeah, it's a dangerous word.
Which is wild to me because in the business world and just in everyday life, honestly, people brag about being cheap.
Well, the word is a badge of honor.
They totally do. But the source lists out what the human brain actually associates with the word cheap. And it is not a positive list. The brain associates it with poor quality, junk, stinginess, being miserly, like plastic crap, and honestly deserving of contempt.
And the danger there is how that association actually programs your reality. I mean, if your primary objective is to always find the cheapest option, you are actively programming your brain to believe that money is inherently scarce.
And
Negative. You're basically telling your subconscious that you can only ever afford the lowest quality of life. It's the ultimate scarcity mindset.
which brings us right back to that battery analogy. The author uses this fascinating concept called thermal economics.
I loved this part.
Right. So think about basic thermodynamics. Energy cannot be created or destroyed, it's only transferred. You do work, you expend your physical and mental energy, and in return, you get money.
Right.
So that money acts as a battery storing the surplus of your energy. So if I take my stored life energy and exchange it for like cheap plastic junk that breaks in a week, I'm literally leaking my life energy like a house with terrible insulation. It is just a massive negative return on investment.
That is the exact mechanism of poverty the text is warning against. But I want to contrast that with the alternative the author proposes. If cheapness is a scarcity mindset, frugality operates from an abundance, solution-oriented mindset.
Okay, wait, I need to stop us right here and just push back on this a little bit.
Sure, go for it.
Because if you're listening to this deep dive and you're actively trying to climb out of debt, this might sound like a distinction without a difference. I mean, isn't frugal really just a polite, dressed-up word for being cheap?
It's a common assumption.
Right. Don't both words ultimately just mean you are refusing to spend money? And more importantly, what if you are, say, a single parent working two jobs and you literally only have $15 in your bank account?
Yep.
Frugal, like buying the higher quality, more expensive option might be a literal mathematical impossibility for you today. So isn't this advice just coming from a place of privilege?
That is a phenomenal pushback, honestly. And it hits on a very real systemic issue, which is the idea that it is extremely expensive to be poor.
Yeah.
If you only have $15, your choices are severely restricted, full stop. But the author's argument is aimed squarely at the mindset and the trajectory you set for yourself when you do finally have a margin of choice.
Okay, I see.
The text defines frugal as being economical, prudently saving, and most importantly, not being wasteful. A cheap person, even when they have $50, asks, what's the cheapest thing I can get today?
Right.
They voluntarily stay in that trap.
Right.
But a frugal person asks a totally different question. They ask, how can I have this? And what must I give up to get it?
What must I give up? That is pure opportunity cost.
Exactly. The cheap person just looks at the price tag.
Mm.
The frugal person looks at the true cost of ownership over time. So frugality isn't about being miserly. It's about the intelligent use of your resources.
Okay, let's ground this in the math then. Because if frugality is about finding solutions rather than just hoarding pennies.
Yes, the great garden hose debate. So let's say you need a garden hose. You go to a big box store. The cheap person looks at a flimsy, thin hose for $15.
Mm.
Then they look at a high-quality, heavy-duty Gilmore hose for $29.
And the cheap brain stops the analysis right there. 15 is less than 29. Boom. Transaction complete.
Right. But then reality sets in. That cheap hose, it kinks every time you pull it. It cracks when the weather turns cold. It is physically miserable to use, and it completely fails after a season or two.
Oh, I've been there.
Right. So over the course of 5 years, you end up buying 4 of those cheap hoses. You've now spent $60, plus the frustration, the wasted time driving to the store, the water leaking everywhere.
Meanwhile, the frugal person buys the $29 hose once. It lasts a decade, it doesn't kink, and the experience of using it actually does the job efficiently. From a business perspective, buying the cheap hose is like investing in a failing company that demands another round of funding every single year just to keep the lights on. It's a massive capital drain. The cheap person focused on price. The frugal person focused on value.
And this logic scales up to massive purchases, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the author talks about vehicles. There's a common misconception that having wealth means you just immediately go buy a Lamborghini.
Right. The ultimate status symbol.
But a Lamborghini costs, what, $250,000? Think about the thermal economics there. That is a massive amount of stored life energy to sacrifice for a piece of metal.
And instead, the author drives a 2005 Ford F-350 diesel truck, which is so funny to me. He bought it for $16,500 in cash.
Yep.
And over 9 years, he put maybe $3,500 into repairs. So that is a total output of $20,000 over 9 years. The true cost of ownership is like $2,200 a year, and it actually does the heavy lifting, the towing, the actual work he needs it to do.
And if he really wants the thrill of driving a Lamborghini, the frugal solution, according to the text, is to go pay a few thousand dollars for a professional track day.
Oh, that's smart.
Right. You get the adrenaline, you push the car to the limit in a safe environment, and you get to keep $245,000 of your stored life energy.
Hmm.
Again, frugality is not deprivation. It's just intelligent allocation.
Okay, but surely there are exceptions. Like, is there ever a scenario where buying the cheap plastic junk is actually the most intelligent financial move?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
And this is where context dictates the spending. The text shares a really good story about the author and his wife taking a 10-day vacation to Sanibel Island.
Okay.
The hotel offers beach chairs and an umbrella for rent, but it costs $20 a day. For a 10-day trip, that's $200.
Which is a terrible ROI for just sitting on the sand.
Precisely. Now, if they had driven to Florida, they probably would have brought their own high-quality chairs. But you can't exactly check beach umbrellas on a flight easily.
No.
So on the way from the airport, they stopped at Walmart and bought 2 cheap folding chairs for $7 each and an umbrella for $20. Total cost, $34.
So they instantly kept $166 of their stored energy.
Right. And the application was perfectly matched to the purchase. The chairs only needed to survive for 10 days. Furthermore, on the last day, they found another family who was just arriving, and they just gave the chairs to them, asking them to pass it on when they left.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they saved money, they solved the immediate problem, and they created a simple chain reaction of benefit for others. So the frugal choice in that specific context was actually the cheap product because the time horizon demanded it.
Man, if context matters that much, like the 10-year hose versus the 10-day beach chair, How are you supposed to evaluate every purchase without just losing your mind? I mean, if you're sitting here listening to this deep dive and you're thinking, great, I need to buy a coffee maker tomorrow, how do I actually calculate this?
Right. Sounds exhausting.
It does. But the chapter provides a specific framework to cut through all that noise. It's called the TRUE method. TRUE, total return on every expenditure.
It is a brilliant mental filter. Let's break down each letter for the listener.
Let's do it.
So T stands for time horizon. You basically have to ask, how long should this item actually serve me?
Okay. And R is real cost. So look far beyond the sticker price. What is this going to cost in repairs, replacements, and honestly, the absolute frustration of dealing with a broken machine?
Exactly. Then U is utility. This asks, how much real use or benefit does this item provide? Like, does the quality actually match the job it has to do?
Right. And finally, ease exchange. What must you give up to have this? Spending money means exchanging your stored energy for one thing, which means you cannot spend it on anything else.
It's all about the trade-off.
So let's actually run a rapid-fire mental calculation of the true method for that coffee maker example.
I love this. Okay, let's say you have two choices. A $20 basic machine with a glass carafe or a $150 thermal brewer.
Starting with tea time horizon. I want a coffee maker to last at least 5 years. The $20 machine has a cheap heating element that usually burns out in, 18 months? But the $150 machine has a full 5-year warranty.
Moving to a real cost. The $20 machine uses paper filters you have to buy constantly. And when that glass carafe inevitably breaks in the sink...
Which it always does.
Right, a replacement carafe costs $15 anyway.
Yeah.
But the expensive machine has a permanent filter and a stainless steel thermal pot that won't ever break.
Okay, utility. I drink coffee every single morning. The utility is extremely high. I need it to brew hot, keep it hot without burning it, and not leak all over my counter. And that $20 machine just burns the coffee after 20 minutes.
And finally, e-exchange.
Yeah.
Are you willing to exchange $150 of your stored life energy for 5 years of excellent, hassle-free coffee every single morning?
Yes, absolutely.
See, so the true method proves the $150 machine is actually the frugal choice.
It's so clear when you run the numbers. Now, I do want to highlight something crucial about the utility part of this framework.
Yeah.
Utility doesn't always mean a physical product. The author gives a really fascinating example about hiring a fishing guide. If you break down the cost of hiring a guide by the pound of fish you actually catch and bring home, it is literally the most expensive meat in the world.
Oh, without a doubt.
The financial ROI is abysmal.
But the true method still applies there because the utility in that scenario is not monetary. It's experiential.
Exactly.
The utility is the memory, the thrill of the catch, the actual time spent on the water. You are matching the spend to the actual benefit you were seeking. You know, you aren't being cheap with your memories.
Okay, so if we apply this rigorous mental math to a coffee maker or a fishing trip, it is economically fascinating how society just completely abandons this logic for massive, life-altering investments.
Oh, here we go.
Let's look at the author's analysis of the modern debt trap.
This is perhaps the most critical application of the true method in the entire chapter. And it really revolves around how marketing slogans can push people into catastrophic financial decisions.
Right. So the text sets up a really stark comparison. Let's say you want to start a business. And you walk into a bank to ask for a $60,000 business loan. What happens?
They laugh at you if you don't have a plan.
Exactly. They do not care about your passion. They demand a rigorous business plan. They want market analysis. They want revenue projections. And they demand strict ROI calculations.
Because the bank wants to know, with absolute mathematical certainty, that they will get their money back. And doing that hard work is actually good for the entrepreneur. It forces you to do serious due diligence. You start asking, what if I fail? Do I really need to borrow this much?
Right. If I walked into a bank and told the loan officer, just believe in my dream, instead of handing them an Excel spreadsheet, I would be laughed out of the lobby. But then the text compares the standard to college loans.
Yeah, this is where it gets heavy.
A student takes out $60,000 or even $120,000 for a degree. And the author uses the example of a communications degree, where the median starting salary might be $40,000, or worse, the student ends up working a job that didn't even require a degree at all.
Right.
There is zero ROI analysis required by the lender. The entire transaction is just driven by emotional marketing slogans like, an education is priceless.
And to be clear to the listener, the author isn't making a moral judgment on the concept of higher education itself.
Right. We're not taking sides on that.
No, not at all. They are just applying a strict, ruthless economic lens to the loan structure itself. And their argument explores the mechanics of why this happens. With student loans, the government guarantees the repayment to the lender.
Right, which completely changes the risk profile.
Exactly. Because the risk of default is entirely removed for the banks, they have literally no incentive to demand a business plan.
Right.
They don't care if your major has any real-world market demand because they get paid either way.
That is so wild. The text actually describes the modern college degree as a deflationary asset with an inflationary cost.
Which is a brilliant way to phrase it.
Right. Think about the mechanics of that. The supply of degrees floods the market, which deflates the actual value and negotiating power of having the degree. But simultaneously, because the government guarantees the loans and 18-year-olds can borrow bottomless amounts of money without any ROI check, universities can inflate the cost exponentially.
Yeah.
In a normal free market, an asset that loses value would drop in price. Here, the cost skyrockets while the value drops.
And the author shares this brilliant story about a former teacher who tried to break this spell.
Oh, I loved this part.
This teacher simply had his high school students open up Microsoft Excel. He had them look up median starting salaries for various degrees, factor in the cost of living, subtract taxes, and calculate the monthly loan repayment. He just asked them to look at the math.
And what happened?
He almost got fired.
He almost got fired for having students run basic math. That is unbelievable.
Because, as the text notes, people get incredibly defensive when you challenge this specific system. They are deeply emotionally invested in the marketing slogan that everyone must go to college regardless of the cost.
Right.
They are terrified of the numbers because, as an engineer quote in the book says, Excel never lies. When you put honest, emotionless numbers into a spreadsheet, you get honest answers back. It just completely shatters the marketing slogan.
Which is a fantastic rule of thumb the author lives by. Now, the text explicitly says you don't need a spreadsheet for every tiny little thing. The author doesn't run an Excel model when he takes his wife out for a nice dinner.
No, that would be miserable.
It really would. But decades of applying the true method to the big things, cars, housing, education, bought him the freedom to enjoy his Tuesday night tacos without stressing. But his hard rule is this. If an expenditure costs more than 1 week of his income, it always goes into an Excel spreadsheet. No exceptions.
Because numbers cut through emotional urges.
Exactly. Well, we have covered a lot of ground today. I mean, we've looked at everything from the thermodynamics of a $20 bill to the actual cost of a garden hose to the macroeconomic mechanics of college debt. Let's distill this down so you can apply it to your everyday life right now. The text actually provides a summary called Law 2 Distilled.
Yeah, these are the core principles you really need to internalize if you want to shift your trajectory. First, cheap thinking focuses entirely on price. Frugal thinking focuses on value.
Okay, second, quality usually lowers the true cost of ownership when it is an item you use frequently. Remember the coffee maker. Remember the hose.
Right. Third, frugality is not deprivation. It is the intelligent allocation of your resources. You are not punishing yourself by being frugal. You are respecting your stored energy.
And we have to watch out for the common misunderstandings, like do not confuse your wants with your needs. Do not assume that the lowest price is the smartest choice, but also don't assume that quality always means luxury.
Right. The F-350 is quality. The Lamborghini is luxury.
Perfectly said. And most importantly, never let a catchy marketing slogan replace your own due diligence. Do not avoid running the numbers just because the math might challenge what your emotions want you to do.
So how do you actually rewire your brain starting today?
Yeah.
Like, how do you stop that immediate impulse to just grab the cheapest thing on the shelf or, conversely, sign a massive loan document without thinking? The author leaves us with three specific mental coding exercises. You have to literally feed your brain new prompts.
What are they?
Okay, prompt one. When I want something, run the code.
Okay.
How can I have it? And what must I give up?
Love that.
Prompt two. When I consider a purchase, evaluate value, not price.
Okay.
And prompt three. Before spending money, calculate the real cost over time. The human brain is a supercomputer. If you feed it better questions, it will search for and find better solutions.
That is the whole shift right there. To sum it all up, cheapness is a scarcity mindset. It repels wealth because it focuses only on the lowest price today, completely ignoring the future costs, the frustration, and the energy drain. Mm-hmm. But frugality is a wealth-building mindset. It respects the stored energy of your time, it focuses on long-term value, and it utilizes practical tools like the True Method and honest spreadsheets to make intelligent decisions.
It is entirely about taking control of your energy rather than letting marketing slogans and emotional impulses dictate your life.
So we're going to leave you with one final thought, a challenge to take with you as you go about your day. Look around your house or your workspace right now. What is one cheap item in your life that is secretly draining your time, your energy, or your wallet through repeated replacements and frustration?
Mm-hmm.
And as you look at your life's next major purchase, whether it's a car, a house, or a degree, ask yourself, are you relying on a marketing slogan to justify it?
Sure.
Or are you willing to put it into a spreadsheet, strip away the emotion, and let the numbers tell you the truth?
Just think about that $20 bill.
Mm.
It is not just paper. It is your time. Protect it.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. Treat your time and your energy with the respect it deserves. We'll catch you on the next one.